You either walk into your story and own your truth, or you live outside of your story, hustling for your worthiness. Brené Brown. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest on this episode of Passing the Torch is a Chief Master Sergeant in the United States Air Force and someone I met in December of 2021. We were selected for promotion at the same time, and over the course of the next 5 months, we spent time together through various social events. Due to the alphabet, I would often be seated next to or paired with my guest. It did not take long for me to realize how truly special he is. My guest is someone I look up to, admire, and have the utmost respect for. Without further ado, Passing the Torch with Chad Van Cleve Goff starts now. First and foremost, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, brother. I know you say it means a lot to you, but it means just as much, if not more, to me. So I appreciate you having me.
I mean, everything I've said, and it's weird. We only, you know, it's only been a year and a half, or I guess closer to 2 years now, but it feels like so much more. And of course, we know we have so many mutual friends. I think, and at this point in our career, we're all connected. My first question is, please describe to me why life is great right now.
Life is great right now because I have the opportunity and privilege to just serve and give back. I'm in the 86th Security Forces Squadron at Ramstein Air Base in Germany, where I have the opportunity and privilege to lead over 500 host nation German military and civilian defenders. By far, one of the best assignments I've ever had in my career as far as squadron-wise. I've been stationed at Ramstein before, but obviously it's different being back there as a chief. So on a professional side, the best thing about life right now is just being a senior enlisted leader and being a leader around America's heroes, right? Just our defenders, they mean a lot to me. I take pride in being an airman's chief and particularly being a defender's chief. Secondly, on a personal level, everything that's great is just, you know, I get to explore Europe with my best half, not my better half, but my best half, my husband, Adam. He serves in his own right. He's intel in our United States Navy. You know, every chance we get, we take an opportunity to travel to a different country or a different location to just enjoy culture and just enjoy life together.
I see all the pictures of you guys going to, like, you know what, let's go have lunch in Belgium today or whatever. Yeah. Or, you know what, we need to go grocery shopping. Let's go to Hungary. Like, you know, we're hungry. Let's go to Hungary. You are an amazing and influential person, someone who has had impact on so many people. And I love the Facebook posts. You're always giving people shout outs. You and your commander are always out doing, presenting something positive to somebody. You and your husband are always out just enjoying life. From past conversations, you shared something very personal regarding your father. Do you mind sharing that story today?
Yeah, I don't mind. I'll just go ahead and let the readers know now, or listeners know now, excuse me. I may get a little emotional talking about this. Basically, in February of 2011, I was a young staff sergeant. Kind of got the worst news of my life, and that was that my father had been killed in a homicide. He had been murdered. You know, at a time in my life where everything was great, I had recently PCS'd from Patrick, at that time Air Force Base, now Space Force Base, to Washington, D.C. to be on the joint staff, living in Washington, D.C. with my mom, thinking everything's great, everything's fine, only to learn that had happened to my father. A critical, pivotal time in my life, just because I didn't have any hope. I was in a very dark spot, both personally and professionally. As a defender, we talked a lot about mental health, and we still do to this day. But back then in 2011, we weren't where we are today when it comes to mental health. And unfortunately, I had my weapon stripped from me. So I was put on the DNA roster, which is Do Not Arm roster. It's now called the TAO roster, the Temporarily Arming Withdrawal roster. My security clearance was suspended and things like that. And it really affected me and hurt me a lot losing that. But I owe it to particularly one particular supervisor. I won't give his name. That was supervising me at the time, though, and realized that I was just in a very dark place. And honestly, when my weapon was taken from me, lost my security clearance, I didn't lose it, but it was suspended. I kind of thought that my career was over, because as a defender, growing up, you know, early in the ranks, if you got your weapon taken from you, it was always for something bad. And not always for something bad, but people would almost treat you as if it was always something bad. And it was a kind of a acronym that they would use as the SWAT team, but not like a good SWAT team, like you think about cops and SWAT going into a building, but the SWAT team was seeds, weeds, and trash. You know, just the people that their weapons were taken from them, they were doing duties that a regular cop couldn't do. But I say all that is because, you know, God had a plan. My supervisor saw something in me, and it was that one time when I was forced to take a knee and forced to not only deal with the grief of losing my father, but also it uncovered so much other grief and hurt that I'd went through as a child. That was a turning moment for me that I do share my story today. It took me about 5 or 6 years to be able to even talk about it like this without breaking down, because it still has such an effect on me, right? But I use it today as a positive, because when I stand in front of my airmen, I have no problem crying. I have no problem showing my heart, showing my emotions, and sharing my story, because I believe that, you know, we have airmen, not just airmen, but people across our world that are going through things in their life. Some not as egregious, if you will, or as bad as what I went through, but just people are in dark spaces, and I think sometimes they just need to hear or see or listen to someone that has maybe been through it. Not because, you know, we're wanting people to show pity to us, but I believe that when people see that, hey, other people have been through this and they've made it out and they're still performing, they're still going places, that they gravitate towards that. And one of the things that I share as a chief and I share in my life, and I firmly believe this, is that, you know, no matter how difficult a certain chapter in your book may be in your life, that one chapter can change somebody else's entire life, right? So I try to hold on to that, right? And just share that with people when I'm talking to them. People that know me, you mentioned earlier, like, hey, people like you, you're inspiring different stuff. If people just meet me, they see this smile on my face. They saw me this one way, and it's almost like a mask. I've learned over the years, especially over the last 3 or 4 years, to just take that mask off, right? And just be vulnerable and let people see who you truly are. And I think as a leader, as a human, as anything, when people see who you truly are, your authentic self, that it builds credibility. It's also relatability, because people can relate to you. And it also, to me, or at least what it's helped in my life, is to be able to connect with people and connect with people in a positive way, in an authentic way, not just fake, just to shake your hand and say, hey, it's great to see you. But when they connect with you through life experiences.
Beautiful. I loved everything you said. And there's a lot to unpack there that I want to do my best. The three pillars of my show are vision, relate, develop. And I always talk about, to me, the best leaders are the most relatable ones. And not everyone's perfect, or not everyone's had a perfect life. They've had some trial and tribulation. And the importance of leveraging that to develop those and mentor those within our sphere of influence. Also, I think I heard Brene Brown say years ago, and vulnerability equals strength. Being strong is so much more than how much weight you lift in the gym. So thank you for sharing that. And you're right, the best leaders, like, it's, I think that old image of having to be like the rough and gruff, like, man, like, it's okay, especially for men, right? Like, it's okay for us to show emotion. Like, I hate that there's a negative stigma or people look down on that. I want to backtrack and just talk about a couple of things, but I do want to ask, where are you on the thick skin versus vulnerable continuum?
Way closer to the vulnerable continuum, but I will tell you that just shifted for me about 3 or 4 years ago. You mentioned just a few minutes ago about men and compartmentalizing and not sharing emotions. That was me. And I think it was just kind of how I was raised, you know, as a male growing up in the South, but then also just growing up as a defender, right? It was shut up in color or suck it up, you know, and just press on. Even still today, you know, when I'm talking to young and old airmen alike, you know, especially men, sometimes they have problems expressing themselves or sharing emotions. So for me, I would say I'm a balance in between the two, and it really depends on the setting that I'm in. But if you get to know the real me, my preferred setting is to take off the mask and let people see the true, authentic me. Because for so many years, I didn't allow that. And I think that was like a burden that I carried. So now I am who I am. You know, a lot of people say what you see is what you get. But I live and breathe it every day. And I used not to do that in a lot of aspects of my life. So I would say on my scale, there are times, yeah, that I got to be tough and I've got to, you know, stand the ground and be that diamond in the rough and kind of hold stuff down. But I want people to be able to see the true, real me. I'm honored, so honored and privileged to be a chief in our Air Force. But one thing that I tell my airmen, and I mean, I get emotional just thinking about it, is like, I'm honored to be your chief, but more importantly, I'm honored to be your wingman, because wearing those 8 stripes does not define me. That's not who Chad is. It's just a chapter in my life that I've been honored and privileged to wear that rank and have that influence, you know, over young women and men or airmen across our military. But I tell people all the time, don't be intimidated, don't be swayed or whatever when you see these stripes on my chest, because more importantly, I want to be your wingman because I want to connect with you, right? It's not about what we wear on our sleeve or on our arm or whatever, about a position. And this goes back to your point about just being vulnerable, because if you want to carry the tough skin or carry a shield of armor, then there may be somebody, and I used to do that, that would stand behind that rank, stand behind that position, and try to be somebody that they're not. And I'm very deliberate of not doing that.
You know, these people who always want to portray this perfect image, it's not attainable for the majority of the people. Like, not very many people in this world are going to look like Ryan Gosling or, you know, or be 6'3 and 240, right? And like, you know, so when they say, oh, life's easy, well, yeah, probably easier for you than compared to like us mere mortals, right?
Yeah.
I want to dig a little bit deeper. Man, there's a lot of goodness there. You talked about 2011, just all the different things that everything you were experienced during that time, and really just had a crossroads, a gridlock, maybe just with your emotions and a future career. But what's something specific that you did to overcome that? And the second part of that question, you mentioned a past supervisor and how they helped get through that time. What is a specific action they did to help you get through that time? Because a lot of times there are people who want to help. They like, man, this person's clearly struggling. I want to be there for them, but they just don't know how, right? And a lot of times we say, oh, you just got to be there for them. Okay, but what specifically? But yeah, what's something specific you did some ownership, or not ownership, but just some action that you took that like, hey, I know I got to do this in order to get better or move forward. And then what's something specific your supervisor did?
Well, after going through everything with my father, I did have to get on some medication there for a little bit because I was having problems sleeping, going through some things. And I was only on it for about 6 or 8 months. And then I got off of them, right? But the thing for me has always been the gym. But more so after that happened to my father, because I did go down a black hole. I did turn to alcohol a little bit. I did do some things that just was unhealthy. And when I did that, I turned away from the gym. I turned away from doing the positive things that I should have been doing. So I really committed harder to my fitness and to my health. But it wasn't just about physical. It was also about mentally and spiritual for me, right? Because obviously just a very black place that I needed to get out of. And I think being in the gym, and even to this day, I'm in there 6 days a week, not necessarily because I want to every day, even though I love it, but because I have to. And, you know, it's not about because I want a six-pack of abs, which I don't have, or have good build or whatever else. It's not even about that for me. It's my release. And I honestly think that if I didn't have fitness as a part of my regime or that I go through every day, that I may be on more medications or on other stuff, because it is kind of my release and what helps me kind of decompress. And then the question you ask about the supervisor, I'll just say straight up, and this is even in today's Air Force and today's world, is that the only thing that he did, and there's a lot of stuff that's there, but he showed me that he cared. And it wasn't just care in the office. He was knocking on my door. He was putting his arms around me when he knew I needed it, right? He was a person that made sure, whether it was a text message, whether it was a call, whether it was anything, that he was there. It wasn't just there when it was convenient for him or just when we were at work. He was deliberate and coming to my house. He was deliberate in asking me to go places. He was there for my family, you know, at the time. And I won't give his name because I don't know how he'd feel about it, but, you know, he and I made chief together. He should have been a chief long before me, right? But like, he will always have a special place in my heart, and still to this day, even a few years later, just to tell you just what kind of man and person he is and his wife is. Like, I lost my mother. My mother passed away. And he was stationed at the time up in, still in the D.C. area. And I was stationed down in Florida at Herbert Field. And my mother passed away. But the day that I put my mother in the grave, the doors of the funeral home opened and him and his wife were there. And they drove overnight to be there. If any supervisors or people that are listening out there, it's like, you can't teach people to care. I truly believe that. Like, it's in your heart. It's either you want to do it and you truly want to be there and care for somebody, or you're just going to go through the motions and make it feel like you do. And that's why, you know, people can say one thing, they can be a lip service, but it's what you do. It's through your actions. And I'm indebted to him. He'll always be my best friend. He'll always be the things for me. But like, I don't even know to this day if he knows, you know, the true impact and how it is. And I talk about him all the time. And I know he says he talks about me, but you know, just give the security forces chief, right? But just honored and privileged that God put him in my life at the right time. And I tell people he was my guardian angel, because I may not be here if it wasn't for him.
So actually, one question I specifically wanted to ask you, but I think you just answered it. What was something specific that, you know, someone did in the moment that, you know, a small action that when you're going through those dark times make you feel better? But that's the answer right there. That's a great story. But a separate question to follow up that is, how do you gain your energy back after something so monumental? Because whether it's something like this, or there's other instances that things can happen to people and it, you know, puts them in a dark space. But what's something you did to gain, how do you gain energy back after something so monumental?
There's a couple things. So my mother at the time, you know, she lived with me. She's really my grandmother. So she adopted me when I was 3 months old, and it was her son, my father, that had got killed. I've always been, I mean, you know, since I was adopted by her and everything, I was relied on to be the rock of the family, right? And I hit that crossroads, you know, where I could either say, hey, I'm going to take my life, commit suicide, or get out of it, or I'm going to be positive, hold my head up, and I'm going to keep charging on. Why? Because my mother needs me. My family needs me. My brothers need me. Also, I was still in the Air Force, right? I knew that I had a job to do. I was a new tech sergeant right after my father got killed. And I think I just used, and people that know me, they know I'm a people person. So I used people, good people camped around me, to really recharge me and energize me and really bring value to my life, right? And I think that that's another nugget that I would give. It's like, you've heard the whole saying about, you know, you are the company that you keep and things like that. Like, I'm a firm believer that you got to have those people camped around you that want to see you better, because there's people out there that don't. And that's also the reason why I became a first sergeant, is because when I was going through all that stuff with my dad, and then I humanitarian from the Pentagon, because I was posted to PCS to California, and then I moved to Andrews, and people just camped around me, you know, and they held me up. It took them 2 years to sentence the guy that killed my dad, you know, and for 2 years I went through that, and then having to stand in the courtroom on behalf of my entire family and read the impact statement, right? For my family, you know, and I'll still tell you to this day, like, I still struggle. I still go through painful times. I'll still break. I'll still cry. Still go through things. But that's okay, because I believe that's part of growth. I think that's part of being a human being, right? It's just allowing your emotions to just come out there and be free. But today's energy, and I'm not saying this as drinking a blue Kool-Aid or doing anything else that's around, though, I got less time in service than what I've already served. Right. And that's not lost on me. And as I told you earlier about being a chief, you know, I've made it to being a chief. So now I just want to do everything I can to give back and to make somebody else better. I know people say, hey, about mentoring people, or, you know, to our future leaders are going to be future chiefs and future whatever. And that's exactly right. But for me, I just want to make people better human beings, whatever that may be. And that's why I try to highlight and put so much positive stuff out there, not just about my airmen, but on social media or different types of stuff. And it's real, because there's so much negativity, you know, around, and different divisiveness and different things that's around there. So I make it a point to just try to be as positive as I can and exude a positive energy all the time. I have bad days, though. I'm not going to lie to you. There's days that I fall short, many days. I try to recalibrate myself and go back to my why and the reason why I'm here. And like I said, that my page in my book or my chapter can inspire or change somebody else's. So that's kind of just how I go in life.
It's hard, right? Because we don't know, like you talked about the mask, and we don't know what's behind someone's mask, or everyone has a story. I had Riley. She has a pretty good following on some other social media platforms, but she talked about everyone has a story. We just see people walking down the street, and we don't know what they're thinking, experiencing. I just want to continue digging on this because you just have like these gems, and this is something that is helping other people. Looking back, was there a childhood coping method you unknowingly developed only to realize later that it wasn't normal but critical to adulthood success? And the answer is not D, all of the above. It's
you know, I grew up in a very Southern family, right? And I mean, hard values, religious, hardworking, work ethics, you know, work hard, do everything. But, you know, growing up as a young guy, you know, and I think people even still do this today, you know, people raise their children. And I remember as a child growing up, you know, saying, you know, little boys don't cry. When I'd be trying to have some emotion where I'd fail and hurt myself on a bike, and my father, my grandfather would be like, hey, you know, suck it up, you know, stop being a, you know what, and little boys don't cry, right? And you kind of get that kind of meshed in your head, right? And you're like, damn, you know, is this not normal? Like, how do I do this, right? And then, like I said, just fast forward, just having to be this kind of hard person. Like I can count on one hand the times that I cried through my teenage years, and most of it was from a death in my family or when I was with my mom, because it's like I was a mama's boy and I'd be sensitive with her and I could kind of release it for a second, but then as soon as I walked out, I would be back to that hard shell, right? I think for me, like through my childhood, I didn't express my emotions a lot, but then as I learned how to express my emotions later on, I think it comes down to knowing when to do it and when not to do it. And I think that's something that I wish I'd have probably learned more of, you know, as a child, about when to express your emotions and when to not. That carries into adulthood. That I would just say now is, like, we talk about emotional intelligence a lot and it has many definitions and many different things, right? Where I talk to you about me being vulnerable and about me crying and about, you know, just kind of letting my emotions be. Also know that there's a time and a place, right? And the reality is some folks have been through some very tragic things in their life that they can't control their emotions. And I used to be one of those people. It took me 5 or 6 years, and you've heard my voice break a couple of times, you know, talking on this, but it's just kind of to tell you like how it is, as I learned to kind of grow through and adjust myself so I don't break in a way, you know, that sometimes can lose people, right? Because the reality is some people are scared of, you mentioned earlier about supervisors caring, like, you know, some people are scared if they sit down with somebody and they just break and they cry and they don't know what to say. They're looking for tissues, they're looking for whatever, right? And, you know, I think that we grow and we learn and we develop and we see the things that work and doesn't work in our lives, right? But I'm fortunate the way that I was raised. But I would say that, like, I don't really have a huge nugget I'd say carry through, but I think it would be the emotional piece of, like, it's okay to cry, but also or to be emotional, but a time and a place to do so.
I had a friend that passed away from cancer a couple months ago, a very dear friend of mine, and we served on 2 deployments together, and there's just a bond that you build when you're deployed with someone. And he was diagnosed with cancer 6 years ago. He was given 6 months to live. But he lived for 6 years. So, I mean, just incredible, right? And super resilient. But I got off work, I think like on a Tuesday, and I checked my phone and I saw that he had passed away. And I'm in the parking lot at work, and it's the busy parking lot, right, where the majority of people park. But I was just crying in my car, just I couldn't control, right? Because it was just, I love him so much. But we did a podcast 5 years ago. He had just found out that he got diagnosed. At that point, he had been diagnosed for like a year. But he was like, hey, I want to be on your podcast because I want my words to live on and stuff. And but anyway, when you shared that, it's made me think of that. All right. So all this happened in, you know, 2011, was it? So in the last 10 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life? And if that's too far to go back, we'll say 5 years, because, you know, as a tech sergeant dealing with things versus, I'm guessing you were a master sergeant in 2018 at the very least. whatever's easier, or what if it's like, yeah, something that's most improved your life habit-wise or ritual?
I think it's two things. Being more deliberate on taking care of me, because we talk about all the time about being a full up round and being able to get after the mission or get after life. It's just being deliberate of taking a knee when I need to take a knee, because I didn't do that for so many years. And one of the things in my leadership philosophy, there's an R in there, and the R stands for respect. And when I talk about respect, people usually assume that I'm going to go down the diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility route, and I don't go down that route. I say R in my philosophy that I'm talking about, and I say R is for respect. And I tell the airman that I give my thing to, I said, I need you to respect yourself enough to know when you need to take a break. Respect your body enough to know when you need to go to sleep. Respect your soul, your heart, and everything enough to know when it needs that rest, right? Because I didn't do that. So I would say that now I try to be more deliberate on, yes, my physical health, working out, doing that type of stuff, but making me time. And it's not being selfish at all, but it's just taking time for me so that I can be able to be a full up round, not just at work as a chief, but also in my personal life for my husband, because he deserves that. He doesn't deserve to have a dud over in the corner, always tired, always different types of stuff. And I still don't get it right, you know, and I'll say that my husband helps me with that. He helps me, you know, throw the government phone in the corner and I mess with doing different stuff to really be, deliberate, you know, and taking time for me. So I would say that that's the thing that's changed the most, is that, hey, if I need to take a break, it's okay. And I can count on one hand the times I've called into work, couldn't go in because I was like on my deathbed in 21 years. But for most times I'm going, I'm grinding through, and I'm like, for what, right? So just knowing, hey, when your body's weak, when your soul's weak, your heart's weak, is just knowing when to take that break. And that's what I try to do as much as possible when I feel myself needing it, because it's the right thing to do. And I can't be worried about what the next person's saying to me. And a lot of people say that, well, yeah, you know, you can do that as a chief. Would you do that as a tech sergeant, as a staff sergeant, as whatever else? And I mean, yeah, there's different cultures and different organizations, different things are there. But I think this comes down with knowing your people, connecting with them, right? And I can use in the Air Force, you know, supervisors per our leave reg have an authorization to give a 1 day 24-hour pass. If it's truly there, somebody needs to do that, there's a way to do it.
I remember when I was a flight chief, I used to get my flight members, I said, hey, once a quarter, you're allowed a hit day or a comp day. I call it the can't even, right? Like when the stage, I can't even right now, like, because we all have them. But it seemed to help like productivity, just because people did come in better. And I think leaders, especially like sometimes the best leaders, they're great at taking care of everyone else, but atrocious at their own self-care. So, and that's something that's I've had to realize over the past couple of years, is like, hey, in order for me to get my beautiful and amazing wife, my beautiful and amazing kids, the best version of myself, I need to just take a week of leave and like, sorry, like I know there's a lot of stuff going on, but we have to do that. I want to switch to some lighter topics, if that's okay, or just some more generic questions. But how has your toolkit for enacting changed? Or excuse me, how has your toolkit for enacting change evolved over the years?
Change is difficult. And the reason it's difficult is because people don't like it. In our military, we're taught certain things, certain ways. And when that changes, when that shifts, it's hard, especially for old heads like myself, for different people that's been around, right, that we see things a certain way and we're not able to open up our aperture. So I think now the things that's evolved for me is taking the time to understand, number one, the reason why. Before even going into a change. And then we've heard all throughout, whether it's in your education or whatever else, about having stakeholders in your organization, stakeholders in your change, or bringing in those people that you need that is going to kind of push the change forward. And I would say, like in security forces, you know, throughout my career, it was a go do. If you said why, it was shut the hell up, keep press, go X, Y, or Z, right? And I think nowadays, just bringing your folks together, getting buy-in, letting them know, not just feel, but know that they are part of the process of where we're trying to get to, and taking the opportunity to hear them out. Because even if the change is going to be something that maybe individuals don't care for, or maybe they don't like, at least when you give them an opportunity to express themselves, express their feelings on the topic, or do everything, one thing they can't say is that you don't value them, right? But when you totally exclude them out of any conversation or out of anything and make decisions without them, that excludes them, right? And at the end of the day, people want to feel valued. And they may not be the person that solved the change or helped go through the change or maybe not go through it, but at least they feel valued through it. So I think today when I think about change in our Air Force, whether it's, you know, a regulation change or just something in my home unit, I start with my senior NCOs, and then I go all the way down, tech sergeants down to airmen, and then I go out after stuff and really talk to people eyeball to eyeball as individuals to just get a pulse and to just get an understanding. So I could say that did not happen 10, 15 years ago, you know, in security forces because policies, things were changing too. But I would say now the career field and our Air Force is just very deliberate about getting folks in, getting stakeholders, getting people in, making them feel valued and letting them be part of the equation as they're driving change.
Please tell us a story about a recent friendship you've made in the last two to three years and how that friendship came about.
A recent friendship that I made in the last 2 to 3 years.
And you can't use me. I know I was at the tip of your tongue.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you try to think back, and I'll tell you, just talking about connections, talking about things that are there. I meet so many great people. And when I meet you with the understanding of I want to stay connected with you. Right? It's not just, it's a fake, hey, shake your hand. If you need something, let me know. It's like, hey, I'm shaking your hand and offering, whether it's offering advice to you or offering to be a chief or just be a friend or whatever, because I want it. Right. And some people, I think maybe they don't, they think it may be a lip service or you're being fake. One particular individual who I would like to highlight would be Master Sergeant Tony Williams. And she happens to be here. I met her during my time at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. She was the manpower SEL when I moved over to FSS when I made chief because I was an overage in security forces. And she's here now, and she's a prior defender, CADM troop. I'll say that Tony is one of those people that I got to know her. And when I came into the FSS at Wright-Pat, and it's not this way now, but I'll just explain to you. I don't know if you know this, but like, there were people that were very apprehensive and intimidating when they heard that a cop was coming to be their chief, to be their SEL, because they had been without a chief for like a year. Yeah. When I went in there. I got there and got to know Master Sergeant Williams, you know, and she was one of the first people to talk to me, and she kind of gave me that feel good, like, hey, I'm a prior cop, I'm this type of deal. But she's the person that as I was going through things in the FSS, like learning and understanding the FSS world, even though she was in manpower, she was that person that would just kind of keep me sane and help calibrate me to make sure I was my very best every day. And how she did that through was just through laughter. Right. And just today, I just saw her just a few minutes ago. No matter what, she always makes me smile. She always makes me laugh. And even if it's just I was just doing down in the lobby talking shit to her about Ohio, because she's from Ohio, and she's everything Ohio. I mean, everything Cleveland Indians, Cleveland, I mean, everything Cleveland is just her, Ohio State, everything. You know, what I've done throughout the years that I've known Tony is just stay plugged into her. And even though she's no longer a right pad, and she's now going to be an instructor supervisor down in Keesler, she's just PCS down there. Tony makes it a point to just send me a note or write a comment on my Facebook page or something. I'd say that's what even though it's so minimal, right? Because I'm in Germany, she's here. Just that one sign, if she's sending a comment, sending a message, or hey, I'm going to be in this area, I just want to see you, right? Just showing those actions just made me realize that hey, it was just more than a conversation with one of my master sergeants. It was, yes, she worked underneath me as her senior enlisted leader, but she wanted to get to know me. She wanted to connect with me, right? And, you know, I think that that's just one small, you know, relationship, friendship that I've built, again, that she was working underneath me. But there's multiple. But the thing I value the most about that, and I'll just offer this on your cast, is that showing somebody you care can be the smallest of things. Just like when they say 30 seconds will change somebody's life, it's the same concept, right? Yeah, you say you want to be friends with somebody, I can use you and I as an example. We don't talk all the time. We'll be messaging here and there. You see me, TDY, hey, man, you're here. You want to link up? You want to do this or do that? Just those little things, right? Staying connected with people means something, because just one of those one little messages could be at one of their darkest times. Could be at a time that all they need to know is that, hey, somebody's thinking about me.
I called you about my podcast. I called you on Facebook, I think audio, like 6 months ago, and just randomly. And I was, and I remember thinking, like, what's he going to think, right? Like, who, you know, but you mentioned about that 30 seconds in March of 2020. I was a squad Nessie at that point, and this is like the second week of COVID, right? And everyone's panicking, teleworking and all that. But I pulled a recall roster, and I called every single person in my unit. And it was a 200-person unit, and I would have conversations with them. It took me 3 days, right? Because I didn't want to just do a checklist. I would actually, hey, you know, what's going on with your kids? Or if they were single, like, hey, do you need toilet paper, right? Just simple things. So I called the guy, and you could tell something was up. And he was a guy that I knew for a couple of years there, so I had the opportunity to know what his normal demeanor was. I immediately, as soon as I got the phone with him, and he had just went through a divorce. I called this flight chief, said, "Hey, you need to call this guy and check on him because something's not right." But I wanted to give the flight leadership a chance to, you know, swoop in and all that. This is at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. So if you ever hear me that saying that phrase, it kind of goes back to that. That the flight chief called him, and the flight chief called me like an hour later, said, "Hey, you know, you're right, but we, you know," he was just kind of going through some emotions, but he's good now. Later on that evening, so really the next day at 1 o'clock in the morning, the flight chief called me again, this time from Tripler, from the hospital, because the guy self-admitted to the emergency room and said that he wanted to kill himself. And he eventually denied. He's doing great now. He was able to get treatment and all. He's a success story, and he's crushing it. Randomly, when I called him that afternoon, he had just finished writing his suicide note. And I had no one had, it just happened. But if I would have waited to call him on Thursday versus Tuesday, and I did go, I think, alphabetical, and his last name started pretty early in the alphabet, but just random, right? So, but sometimes that random act of kindness. And I know there have been people who have done things for me that have helped me. Before we wrap this up, I do want to ask you, this is a question I'm starting to ask on my all podcasts, is what are you running from and what are you running towards?
Well, what am I running from? I would say I'm running from negativity. We mentioned it earlier. I used to be a person that absolutely loved government, loved politics, loved watching the news, local news, anything. But today, when you turn on the TV, there's so much negative and so much divisiveness across the world. I'm not even going to say United States, whatever else, just across the world, right? Whether it's gun violence, whether it's anything, I mean, just to like watch just your local news, it's just so much negativity. And honestly, if you sit here and watch just a 30-minute newscast, it'll change you. And it'll make you feel scared. It'll make you feel like what's happening in the world, what's happening in life, you know, different stuff. So I would say the things that I'm running from is negativity, and not just like negative things like around me, but even like negative people, right? And don't get me wrong. There are certain people that we just have to be around and be around because they're negative, because they work in our organizations, different types of stuff, and that's fine. We have to do it. But as far as like where I have a choice in it, I don't want to put myself around anything that's negative, because the things that I've been through in my life, the dark holes that I've been, something, things like that could easily slide me down in back into those same areas, right? And I don't want to be around negative people that just want to talk about all the negatives, or to talk about drama, or to talk about different things. Like, life is amazing, right? Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Is there going to be challenges? Is there going to be speed bumps? Is there going to be mountains that you have to climb and get over? Absolutely, right? But at the end of the day, you're living, you're breathing, and you've got a life ahead of you. You got to get through those obstacles. But as you're facing those obstacles and going through that, don't just let those things be the things that encourages you to be negative, right? Because I look at negativity and energy and attitude as almost synonymous for me. It's like I ask myself every day before I walk into my squadron, because I truly believe that attitude and energy, again, synonymous, that they're contagious. So I ask myself when I walk in a building every day, or particularly in my squadron, Chad, is your attitude worth catching? And if it's not worth catching, then I need to sit in my car a little longer and recalibrate. Because if I go in there with a poor attitude and poor energy, then it's going to feed into other people. So I say that same thing is about negativity, right? Is I don't need it around me, and I choose to keep it away from me. There's a lot of things going on around, and some things we can't control, right? So there's nothing we can do, but we can control our attitude and how we react to it and the energy that we exude back. So that's what I'd say I'd run from would be the negativity. Running to, as soon as you said it, I was like thinking in my head, what am I running to? What am I running to? What am I running to? And honestly, there's a lot of things that I could say right now, name little bitty things that I'm running to. But right now, for me, where I'm at, and I'll use it on a career perspective, I don't know how much longer I have left in this race, right, as far as my Air Force career. Every day I'm running towards my best, right? And what I mean by running towards my best is that I'm going to wake up and I'm not going to be able to give 100%. And you may have heard me say this in my speech that I gave one time at ALS. I'm maybe going to only give 60%. But on that day that I give 60%, make it my best 60%, right? Is that things are going to happen around us. And as we're, you know, going towards things in life, and as I talk about just whatever things happen around me, is I'm going towards my best, whatever that may be. So even on this podcast, right, I hope I was able to give the best version of who I am. Again, authentically Chad and who I am. But just with everything that I do is just run towards my best. And if I'm running towards my best, giving my best in everything that I do, again, it goes back to that energy, that contagious thing that people are going to gravitate towards, right? It's not about me as a person, you know? I'm humbled and honored when you tell me that, hey, people like you, they're just having stuff, right? And I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that. But I'd much rather them say, man, his energy, his positivity, his things, you know, he's always trying to give his best, right? Because people mentioned to me the other day, there was a chief talking to me, and he was talking to another chief, and he goes, man, he said, Chad has been this way since he was an A1C. He said, the same guy that you see today as a chief, same person as an A1C. And I'm honored by that, right? I think a lot of that is by my family and the things that move forward. But I would just say that I'm running towards my best, and whatever that may be, because each day is a new day. Each day is a new experience. Each day I get to meet somebody different. But as long as I put my best foot forward and try to be my very best, I think that's the least I can ask of myself.
Is your attitude worth catching? Is that what you said? I love it. All right, wrapping up, I'm going to ask some rapid-fire questions. There's no... These are going to be random, all right? These are just miscellaneous questions. There's no flow. When I was doing my notes, you know, this is what I did for you. These are all my notes for you, right? And I have 8 other podcasts lined up for this week. So these are just a stack of, like, different people. But I have a list of questions, and I'm like, I'm saving these for you. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Is that multiple choice?
It can't be D. Here, this is what you're running from right here. Like, this is what you're running from. What purchase of $100 or less has most positively impacted your life?
$100 or less. That's impacted my life. Wow. I would have to say the book Team of Teams.
Oh, General McChrystal, right? Yeah. That's good. Okay. I know you're an amazing singer. I know your other talent, so you can't give me the stuff that... And most people know this, so it's no secret. Everyone that knows you. What are you world-class at? What are you world-class at that people might not know? Like, if we were to watch America's Got Talent...
Yeah, I played... So, a couple. I'll give you a funny one and a real one. So, I played violin for 17 years. So I was a classic violinist that played and did that. But obviously my whole family is musically inclined. So you have, you know, Torta Tops and Blue vocalists. But also I would say one thing that I'm classic at, I was hoping I was being able to do it last night. People that know me could see it at Ramstein recently. I did it. I don't hold back from it. I'm classic at doing the wobble. So anytime I'm get on the dance floor, do the wobble, one thing, and I'll say I was armed up and on duty over the 4th of July at Ramstein, and I got out there on the thing, full gear, full get up. It's on the Ramstein page,
okay,
doing the wobble.
I need to go
there
check
is.
This out.
Yep.
Your husband was like, hey, isn't that your husband?
No, it's not my husband. Oh, no, he knows. I do it everywhere we go.
If you could put a billboard anywhere in the world for everyone to see with your message for everyone to see, where would that billboard be and what would that message say?
Wow. That's a tough one. You can only put one place.
You know what? Because you're VIP, I'll give you two places.
So this one will be interesting, but I guess the two places that I would choose to put it at is, this will probably make you laugh, but I think that it's important to do and so influential, is I think the first one that I would put it would be a billboard as you're going into Walt Disney World. And I say into Walt Disney World because I'm from Florida. I'm from Central Florida, and the most visited place in the whole state of Florida is Orlando, and primarily because of Mickey Mouse and because of Walt Disney World. And yeah, they're going there with their children and people from all over the world and people that are there. And yeah, maybe some of the kids couldn't read it, but I think that there's enough there from adolescents, teenagers, all the way through adults, and things that just kind of go through. And the message would be, never forget where you came from.
Love it. I wonder like where it ranks in the U.S. in terms of most visited places, because it's got to be top 10. I mean, there's millions of people each year from around the world, actually, that go to Walt Disney.
Yeah, but I won't go with number two. I'll go with Disney because I just think there's so many people that go there. And I say that because I'm from there. But I mean, millions upon millions upon millions of people visit there. And I just think it's huge because of the amount of people that go there. And I just think if people could look up and realize that, because so many times people get into things and they forget to look back of how far they came and what they've been through and where they've made it to. Right? And sometimes we need to humble ourselves and back up and never forget why we started and never forget where we came from.
Last two questions. When you think of a movie image that depicts leadership, who or what comes to mind?
A movie image or a movie or an image or
a movie image that depicts leadership. You know, it could be a scene or, you know, actor or an actress, but or just anything, but like who or what comes to mind?
Oh, wow. This one's kind of tough. I go back to the movie Lincoln. And I think so just because, I mean, President Lincoln, I mean, people that just doesn't dig it. And there's so many scenes, so I don't even want to kind of go through. But there's so many things. The man was a man of few words, but his impact that he made across our nation, across the world, was huge, right? And I'll leave it as that. I mean, I just think that when I think about leadership and just movies that just pop in my head, that's one man that if I had an opportunity to meet and pick his brain, it would be him. Because, again, a man of few words, but his impacts were just monumental.
Yeah, no, agreed. No, agreed. Last question. What does the hero of your story want?
Say that again.
What does the hero of your story want?
The hero of my story want? Well, I believe, I mean, this is kind of a broad question, but I'm going to frame it just what comes to mind for me.
I purposely leave it broad just because I don't want to frame the answer.
My hero is my mother. And when you say the hero of my story, you know, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for her. Right. And, you know, I'd have been out of our Air Force at my 20-year mark and wouldn't have kept going. But my mother was my dependent, you know, 15, 16 years. And there wasn't a day that I came home from work from wearing senior airman all the way through master sergeant when she passed away, because I was a master sergeant, that she didn't tell me, you know, every day, baby, you're going to be a chief. Baby, you're going to be a chief. I'm indebted to that woman, right? And I believe that she is my hero. She's my guardian angel. And I think what she would want is for me to just continue to live my true authentic self, not worrying about what the people to the left and the right say about me, And I'll close it with this, is just, you know, as I think about that, because I lived a life where I was always concerned with what people thought about me or what they were saying or different things just throughout life, right? When I was a child, young, and then even in the military, I stick to a Dr. Seuss quote that, you know, she would express to me. And I think that that's what she would want me to carry on and can continue on. And the quote is, those who matter don't mind, and those who mind don't matter. As you think about that and think about life, I know she just wants me to live my true, authentic self. And I think as she's looking down on me and as my guardian angel protecting me, is I wake up every day trying to make her proud. But I think that she just wants me to be me. Let people see the true Chad that she knew before anybody else did. Because remember, I told you, she was the person that I could be in a room with, cry with, and let her see the true me. Right. And I think that the thing that she would want is just to me to be me and continue to let people see me, you know, for who I really am. And if they like you, they like you. If they don't, they don't.
That's it. Chad, thank you so much just for opening up and just passing on your wisdom and just sharing your message. I have nothing but just admiration, just respect for you, my guy. You're an incredible person, a human being. And again, I'm just I'm honored that you came on my podcast. Like, to me, like, you're a big deal. Like, you're a celebrity. So, yeah, thanks, Chad.
Well, I appreciate it. I think celebrity's far fetching, but I'm really, 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 you know, the honor and privilege is all mine, Martin. I mean, the fact that you had me on here, and I know we've been trying to work this out. The last thing that I'll say is that what you're doing is a big deal. And it's not about that you had me on here and how many people is going to hear it, whether it's two or whether it's a million, that's irrelevant. But what you're doing and allowing people a platform, an opportunity to take their mask off, to share their story, to share who they are, and to let other people hear it, right? Because there's a lot of people that won't sit down like you and I do and I'll talk eyeball to eyeball. But they'll be driving down the road in their car, and they'll turn on something. And I think these types of platforms and these types of conversations and the things that you're doing is those things sometimes that'll get people to take off that mask or open up or allow them to maybe look at things through a different lens to allow them to maybe change, grow, and develop. So I want you to know that this podcast and like our other things here going on at AFSA, some of these platforms, these things didn't exist 15 years ago, right? And if they did, you had to have a lot of money and they were out there and you were doing things on the wave, but now there's an opportunity for people to sit down. So again, brother, the pleasure is all mine. And if I can ever do anything for you, this podcast, whether it's personally, professionally, whatever else, I'm always a phone call away. You're a brother to me. I love you. And I know that we could have got a lot deeper today with a lot of other stuff. So I'm always here for you. And it's not just for you, for your team, your family, anything. So again, thanks for having me on the show.
That concludes another episode of Passing the Torch. Big thanks to my guest, Chad Van Cleve Golf. Chad is a new friendship that I have developed over the past 2 years and someone I am proud of. I could recap this episode, but I would not do it justice and not even sure where to begin. I do have a favor to ask you. It cost me money out of pocket to produce this podcast. I won't share exactly how much because I am recording this outro in my living room and my wife is within earshot. I'm actually getting a crazy look as we speak. I do the podcast because I love it. If you enjoyed the episode with Chad and want to support, the best way to support is to like and share this podcast on Facebook. The other way to best support is by liking and watching the video on YouTube. These two small actions will have an astronomical impact for Passing the Torch. Also, please message me and let me know your favorite part. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. And finally, remember, vision, relate, develop. Take care, everyone. Foster out.